Better Health Radio Show with your host, Dr. Renee Boyce. Before we get into the show and say good evening to Dr. Boyce, let me just tell you and welcome Servier to our show. Today's edition of the Better Health Radio Show is brought to you with the compliments of Servier Central America and the Caribbean. So a big thank you to Servier Central America and the Caribbean. Let's go over to our lines and say a very good evening to Dr. Renee Boyce. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Redston. How are you?
Not too bad this week at all. Not too bad.
Okay, that's great to hear. Just this morning, someone said to me that they enjoy the show. They enjoy the bits of laughter which pass between you and me. So shout out to Miss Jones. And I also have to send a shout out to a wonderful couple in St. Joseph, Denzel and Lorraine Beyer. I want to say hello to them. Hope that they're listening today. And a wonderful couple, traditional country values, kind and two wonderful people. So good evening to everybody. You're listening to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. And that's the purpose of the show, to educate and therefore effect change in the lives of the people in our country. We're going to be discussing a topic that we've broached many times on this show before. We're going to be discussing diabetes. Yesterday, for those of you who don't know, was World Diabetes Day. It's celebrated every year since 1991 on November 14th. The theme this year is the nurse and diabetes. So we take this opportunity, of course, to say hello to all of those nurses who work both publicly and privately, but especially to those nurses who are involved in the care of those patients who have diabetes. It's not an easy job to do, and we'll discuss a little bit more about that when we get into the show. I think that I will just briefly reply to two things that we had last week. We had two persons who spoke about, one spoke about vitamin D and COVID-19. So let me just deal with that very briefly. Vitamin D is related to the immune system. The receptors for vitamin D are expressed on those cells which are important in immune function. You tend to find vitamin D deficiency in those persons who are already immunocompromised, such as those persons who have chronic diseases, such as diabetes, and those persons who are institutionalized, so persons who would be in the elderly for care facilities. In research, you try to distinguish between what we call confounding factors, whether something is causing, A is causing B or B is causing A, if one is as a result of the other. And it really, at this point, I don't think that we can say vitamin D deficiency leads to COVID. I don't think that that's a fair statement. It was a study that was done in Spain, I believe, 216 persons in ICU who had been diagnosed with COVID. And they found that those persons who were in that study, they had decreased levels of vitamin D. So scientists they have been looking at the role of vitamin D in things such as autoimmune diseases, looking at vitamin D in the chronic diseases themselves, and looking at vitamin D in cancer. So they're working on finding out whether there is an association with vitamin D and all of these things which I mentioned previously. That was one. And two, last week on the show, I said that our major source of vitamin D comes from the sunlight. And I researched it again, and I reiterate that our major source of vitamin D comes from the sunlight. There are many factors which influence the amount of vitamin D. One of them would be the number of melanocytes, or in Barbadian parlance, how black you are, how dark you are. And therefore, if you have more melanin or many more melanocytes, those are the cells which produce melanin, the coloring of our skin, those absorb the UVB rays from the sun. And therefore, you would take a little while longer to synthesize vitamin D than a person who is fairer. So the question is not whether or not you should try to get your vitamin D from the sun. The question is, how can you protect yourself when you are outside getting your vitamin D? And you can't sit down by the window saying that you're going to get your sunlight there, because those rays can't pass through glass. So you need to go outside. And it'd be good to go outside because, as we're going to discuss with Dr. Kristen Curtin, one of the things that we can do to manage diabetes is get outside and move around a little bit. So I hope that I've clarified any discrepancies that might have occurred in our previous show. And what I want to suggest for this show is that in an effort for us to get the information over, we are going to spend the first 10 minutes of the show just giving information. I will ask Dr. Curtin some questions, and then we'll invite our persons to call in and to send your WhatsApps. We don't want you to wait until 5 minutes to six to start calling or to send in your WhatsApps, but just so that we can get the information, because we've discovered from previous shows, we've planned, and nothing that we planned has occurred. And it happened the last time Dr. Kristen was on. So good evening, Kristen. How are you?
Good evening, Dr. Renee. Right. I am fabulous. How are you?
Are you truly fabulous in medicine? I mean, medicine in general. You're in one of four positions, I've always said. You're either pre-call, on-call, recovering from call, or post-call. Dr. Curtin, tonight is post a very difficult call last night, and I'm saying a very big thank you for coming on here and helping us out.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. And you can't dictate call. You can't let call dictate your life anyway. So it's a pleasure to be here.
No problem. So let's just jump in with the basics. First of all, we are trying to understand, what is diabetes? Simple question.
Simple question, and I'm sure in the world of academia, it's not as straightforward of an answer. But for the persons out there listening, so diabetes, and we're going to emphasize today type 2 diabetes, correct?
Yes.
Right. So type 2 diabetes is a chronic condition. So chronic meaning you have it for your life, even though some evidence now is trying to propose that you can reverse it. And that's another conversation for another time. But type 2 diabetes is a chronic condition where the body isn't responding to insulin as well as it should. So it's a condition characterized by something called insulin resistance. So what insulin is a protein that is produced by an organ in the body called the pancreas. It sits behind the stomach. And what that does is that lowers the blood sugar after we eat. And that's very important. So there's a normal response. I know sometimes people get very perturbed when they eat and they check their blood sugar 5 minutes after and they realize, hey, it's 20. Yes, that's okay. That's a normal response. But what happens is that within 1 to 2 hours, your blood sugar should be on the decline. And that's insulin's job. And what happens is that in type 2 diabetes, insulin isn't working as well as it should. So you might be still producing it, but your body is not responding to it. And so after you eat, the blood sugars tend to remain higher and higher until ultimately you either need medications, which could be tablets, or you need insulin. After a while as well, I want to explain to some persons, I want to use this opportunity to go into it now, because I have a couple patients that I can see their faces in front of me who do everything that they're supposed to do, but still end up on insulin and they see it as a failure. So I want to emphasize the fact that a part of the diagnosis or a part of the definition of type 2 diabetes is that it's dynamic. It means that it changes. So the state of your insulin resistance today might not be the state of your insulin resistance 2 years from now, 7 years from now. And you can imagine that because your body is trying to respond to insulin, it produces more and more and more. And eventually, like us human beings, we get tired, right? We get tired. So I like to tell persons, think of it as a sponge. You're trying to squeeze the sponge to produce insulin. But after a while, guess what? All the water in that sponge is gone. All that insulin is gone. And unfortunately, then you're at that point where you need to supplement with insulin. So it's a state of insulin resistance until a point where you're insulin deficient. And that is type 2 diabetes.
Over the years, the face of insulin has changed. Previously, insulin was a threat. If you don't do what I say that you're supposed to do, I'm going to have to put you on insulin. And sometimes that might have come from physicians and nurses and other persons in the healthcare sector from a position of frustration. But we see that medicine has changed, where insulin introduction is now even earlier in the along the pathway, along the guidelines for managing diabetes, rather than it being a last resort. Because one of the things that healthcare professionals, one of the things that they're trying to do is to reduce the complications of diabetes, because that's where the trouble comes. Who are the persons that are likely to develop diabetes? And remember, we are distinguishing here this evening between type 1 and 2 diabetes. We've had on the show before a family with a teenager who had had type 1 diabetes, and perhaps next year sometime we can have another family to go over type 1, because type 1 diabetes is very significant as well. So we will have that show again. But for type 2 diabetes, what are some of the risk factors?
Right. So this is very important, particularly in our population. And that's a hint at one of the first risk factors. So the being Black, ethnicity, Black, Latino, that puts you at risk of having diabetes. And you, whenever you look at risk factors for any condition, you want to classify them into things that can be changed and things that unfortunately cannot be changed. So the things that cannot be changed, we call unmodifiable or non-modifiable risk factors. And those include things like our age. We can't help but get older, all right? So once you become 45 years and older, it's that time that you need to start screening for type 2 diabetes. Things like our ethnicity, right? We can't change if we're Black. We can't change if we're Indian, if we're Latino. And why would we, right? We want to embrace that anyway.
True.
But that is, in fact, a risk factor. Also, things such as family history. We can't change our inheritance, and that is one as well. In terms of modifiable risk factors, now things that we can do something about, and this is where I get excited, as you know, we have things like physical inactivity, so sedentary lifestyles. We need to get up and move, and I will always list that as number one, and there are many reasons for that. Other things that we can change include our weight. So that goes along with physical activity as well. Our diet, trying to stay away from a high carb, high sugar, simple sugar diet as well. And then there's some other areas that tend to float between the two. So things such as gestational diabetes. Okay, we can't change the fact that we unfortunately developed diabetes during pregnancy, but sometimes that is linked to weight and those risk factors that we spoke about before. And conditions such as PCOS, I realize that condition is gaining a lot of traction in Barbados recently, and that is polycystic ovarian syndrome, and that too predisposes females to develop type 2 diabetes later on in life. So those are just a couple.
So just I think the important thing is, and that, like you get excited about things that can be changed. Sometimes you wish you can change things like your height. I remember being at a seminar and saying gender was a risk factor, and I put gender under non-modifiable factors, and somebody corrected me and told me that gender can be changed. So that's up for discussion. But we get excited as physicians about the ability to do something. Most physicians feel powerless when there seems as though there isn't anything that we can do. But what we want to put out to patients is that those modifiable risk factors really and truly are in your control. You can control your level of activity. And as Dr. Curtin will explain, we don't necessarily need to go to the gym and work out for an hour and a half every day and sweat bricks in order to become more active. We're going to discuss that a little bit later on. But what we want to talk about now would be some of the signs and symptoms of diabetes.
Before Dr. Kristen gets involved in giving the information you're asking, let me just give the listeners this piece of information and remind them that this week's edition of the Better Health Radio Show is brought to you with the kind compliments of Servier Central America and the Caribbean. We don't want to forget them. So as we proceed, I'll be reminding you that we got to give thanks to Servier Central America and the Caribbean. Continue, Doc.
Sure. We were just about to talk about signs and symptoms, and part of our education here on the show is distinguishing between what is a sign and what is a symptom. A sign is something that's reproducible, that can be seen, or something that you can do. So, and a symptom is something that is felt by the individual, by the patient, or something that's going on with them. So, for example, pain is a symptom. But when I press on an area on your body that in which you're feeling pain, I elicit tenderness. So tenderness is a sign, pain is a symptom. So what are some of the signs? Let's talk about symptoms, some of the symptoms of diabetes. Or as a matter of fact, let's just group them all together. What are some of the things that are seen or felt when persons become symptomatic of diabetes type 2, diabetes mellitus type 2?
Sure. And even putting that even more simply, so what is it that you're going to experience as a patient to cue you in that you might have diabetes? And this, of course, is not to send anyone into a panic if you have one of these. You usually have several. So we like to group them. So the first one are the polys, the polydipsia, so where you're feeling excessively thirsty. That is a common one. Polyphagia, where you're feeling excessively hungry. And this is not in the context of you wanting a second salt bread just because it's so good. But
did you have
in the
to mention salt by Kristen? I mean,
you know that I have to go after carbohydrate, especially of this nature when I'm talking about type 2 diabetes.
It how many different foods are available to the public, and the one you would choose would be a salt bread?
Because I know the public. I know our public. And I love our public. So polydipsia, polyphagia, where you're eating excessively, and there's a reason for that. So what happens is that because you don't have that insulin response that I was talking about before, the cells in the body are not getting sugar into the different organs that needs it. So instead, you're just feeling excessively hungry, trying to get that glucose in, trying to get that sugar in, despite so much of it being already in the bloodstream. The other thing that happens is something called polyuria, which is excessively urinating, so excessively going to the bathroom. So those three things are pretty characteristic. So once again, excessive thirst, excessive hunger, and excessively passing urine. Other things that might cue you in are certain types of infections, especially in females. They might notice an increase in yeast infections. In terms of males, they might notice that they've had a wound for a while and for some reason it's taking forever to heal, or whenever they get stuck, for example, there's always it's always an infection that results from it as opposed to it just healing quickly. So frequent infections or wounds that take forever to heal are other signs or other symptoms, sorry, that can occur.
All right. Once again, let me just interrupt you again, doctor. I am deeply sorry for doing this, but gentleman who's listening to you as we speak, just called to let us know that in the area between the junction of Brighton Plantation and St. Luke's Church, there's a fallen tree across the road, and it's on some of the utility wires. So he's appealing to the light and power to address that matter as soon as possible. And just generally letting persons know that in that area, the junction between Brighton Plantation and St. Luke's Church, a tree has fallen across the road and touching some of the electricity wires. So if you can avoid that area for the time being, it'd be nice if you do so. But he's listening to you. He said that he's listening to you, Doc. So carry on.
Yes, this is the opportunity that I'm going to take to say something that a few people in my family say. I love Barbados. I love Barbados. on the genuine concern of people. Yes, we have certain persons in society who are contrary to the rule of law, but generally speaking, the people are kind. So we were talking, Dr. Curtin. We're in with Dr. Kristen Curtin on the Better Health Radio Show today, and we are discussing diabetes. We were discussing about men and their wounds. In men, frequently, impotence is one of those things that gets the men to come to clinic or to go to their doctor, because that's one of the areas that's affected in type 2 diabetes that's not well controlled. What else do we have? Pins and needles.
Vision. Mm-hmm. Yep, and pins and needles. Correct. So those are two symptoms that persons tend to reason away, I find, in particular with diabetes. So my vision is blurry, maybe it's that I need glasses, and you might defer getting it checked out. And then sometimes that might turn out to be your sugars being high. And then it's pins and needles as well. So many different causes for pins and needles, but one of the ones on the top of the list definitely is high blood sugars. So those are the main ones that we would have covered just now.
So 434-1790, that's the number to reach Gregston in studio, and 266-4862 for those of you who have longer queries or are a little shy and don't want your voices to be heard on the radio, you can send us a WhatsApp. As I mentioned before, we're in with my friend and colleague, Dr. Kristen Curtin, who has spent some time at the diabetes clinic at the QEH, and she has done some additional postgraduate studies in diabetes. So she's well qualified to speak on this subject. And for those of you who are now joining us, we would have gone through what diabetes is. We would have gone through the different types of diabetes. We would have discussed briefly some of the signs and symptoms. What I want to do is share some figures that someone had shared with me. And it is a summary of the Barbados Drug Service statistics on the treatment of non-communicable diseases for the fiscal year 2018 to 2019. So putting that in layman's language, this is a table in front of me showing how much money was spent on treating chronic diseases between 2018 and 2019. At the top of the list is diabetes, having spent a whopping $2,510,421.86. And this is in the public sector only. That does not include the amount of money that was spent in the private sector. And just so that I can add insult to injury, $2,262,273, and for good measure, 66 cents. That's $5 million right there, in excess of $5 million spent solely on diabetes. And there are other diseases on this list, other chronic diseases such as hypertension and asthma and cancer and so on. But our focus this evening is diabetes. And it pains me that this amount of money is being spent. You know, I'm thankful that that amount of money, let me choose my words carefully. I'm thankful for the privileges that we have in our healthcare system in this country. However, I firmly believe I stick my neck out there that we still have a long way to go in trying to manage the healthcare budget that we have, and much can be done with education as well as persons taking diabetes seriously. I'm quite sure that Dr. Curtin will attest to this, that there have been patients who have been bold enough with diabetes to come to clinic or go to the hospital and have a slice of sweetbread and a bottle of a sweetened carbonated beverage as their food of choice. And we continue to speak to these things and persons say, well, I got dead anyhow, so I could as well enjoy myself. You know, this sort of laissez-faire attitude. Really, that's what we're trying to get beyond so that we can get people to understand this is something that we can manage properly. What are your thoughts, Dr. Curtin?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to echo what you're saying and even add to it. I think I've seen one too many cases now where persons come in with prescriptions filled but not taken. So when I hear how much money we're spending and to know that there's some persons out there filling the prescriptions as they should religiously, but they're just adding to their their medical cabinet at home, it's worrying. I've seen it too many times. Correct. And, you know, you and I have this thing of being very blunt, and I don't want to ever discourage someone not to fill prescription. But in my opinion, there's somebody out there who might not have had their prescription filled because you filled it, but you're not taking your meds. So to anyone out there, quite frankly, who is right now staring at a full jar of medication, a full jar of metformin that you have not taken, I want you to just think about somebody who hasn't been able to have theirs filled today, all right? And take it seriously, because these things cost money and everyone in Barbados who's contributing to taxes, like you and myself, are paying for it. So please take your health seriously. All right.
We've gotten a question from someone who is listening to the show. Remind me, Gretchen, at the end of the show, I have to say thank you to someone. So remind me, write it down, because between the two of us, we never seem to remember things.
I promise you this time I won't write it down, and I will remember. I promise you.
Okay.
All right. Hold me at my word.
Okay. All right. So this person wants to find out, which is exactly where we were going. We've discussed the pathology, the underlying things that go wrong with diabetes. We've outlined the symptoms. So this person has now received the news that he or she has been diagnosed with diabetes. What's the next step? And even before that, let's go to the diagnosis of diabetes. How is it diagnosed?
Of course. So it's diagnosed traditionally with a blood test. There are three main types, but now one is fading out. So we're just going to go through those. So the first one is the fasting blood sugar test. That's the one that most physicians use. It requires you fasting for at least 8 hours overnight. So that means nothing at all to eat or drink for at least 8 hours before the test, at least 8 hours. Okay. Tea counts. You know, you can't have tea.
Mints
count, right? So those are things that persons traditionally don't associate with fasting, but they do make a difference. So you come fasted 8 hours at least, and you have a blood stick done, a blood draw done, and you're looking for a value. So the value to diagnose diabetes fasting in our society is 7 millimoles per liter. So if it's 7 or above on two readings, we have diabetes. Most guidelines are still perpetuating that you need it, that you need to have these elevated readings at least twice to confirm the diagnosis. The other way that we can diagnose is something called an oral glucose tolerance test. And it's a long way of saying, how well can you handle sugar pressure, right? So you give someone a sweetened beverage. From all accounts, it's really, really sweet, and
it's
most
like
patients
syrup.
Don't like it.
Syrup.
I've heard. So you measure your blood sugar before you start. You take this really sweet drink, and then you measure your blood sugar 2 hours after, and you look to see what the result is. Most persons tend to not like it because it's long-winded. You have to be at the lab for at least 2 hours. You have to take this drink, and it doesn't really add too much more. It's more of an academic thing, because some persons, surprisingly, can have good blood sugars when they first get up in the morning, but their problem is handling what we call carbohydrate load. So they would find that they can eat, I'm going to call it again, Dr. Rennie, they can eat a salt bread, but whenever they eat a salt bread, their blood sugar spikes. But once they remain good throughout the day, by the time they wake up the next morning, their fasting blood sugar is good. So that test is really to spot persons who have a problem responding to sugars in a normal way after they eat. The last test, and the test that I like tremendously, is the HbA1c test. And that is glycated hemoglobin. What that means is it tests how much sugar is stuck onto your red blood cell. Your red blood cell lives for about 90 to 120 days. And the sugar that's in your bloodstream, if you can picture it like a ZR, it sticks onto that ZR and it never lets go until the ZR gets back to home base. All right. And in this setting, home base is when the red blood cell dies. But what happens is that you can't shake it. You can't shake the passenger. This is one passenger that you can't shake. So as much changes, you could change the route, you could change the scenery, that blood sugar is going to stay forever until that red blood cell dies. So what it does is that it tells us as the physician, as the healthcare professional, basically your route, right? So how much sugar you were exposed to, how much sugar your organs were exposed to over the last 3 months. It doesn't mind if, for example, you were really good the week before, you know, so you took a different route on your way to clinic for that week before. It will show you up if for those previous 11 weeks, you were eating salt bread all week long. All right. So your HbA1c reflects your 3 month control. And the measurement is 6.5%. So 6.5% or higher is diagnostic for type 2 diabetes. Again, you usually need two readings to confirm. But of course, if it's something like 10% and the person has symptoms, that's usually enough to make the diagnosis. And that brings me into the last way of making the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, which unfortunately we see quite often in the hospital setting. And that's where persons come in with very high blood sugars plus symptoms. So if you have all the symptoms that we spoke about before, plus an elevated blood sugar, that's enough to make the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. So if you have the going to the bathroom frequently, the infections frequent, feeling hungry excessively, weight loss as well, plus a blood sugar of 11.1 or higher, we don't need to stop for an A1C. We know right there and then this is type 2 diabetes.
Gregston?
Yes, please. I've got a call on the line for you, Doc. And I've also got a query here. This one says, after the query, we'll go to the line. So please stand by, sir. Can you please ask the doctors, why does prednisolone, did I get that right?
Yes.
Right.
You got it.
Why does it increase your glucose level? That's the question on the WhatsApp.